record and call the meeting to order. Would there be any citizen comments? I've seen none, then I have no reports to any committee members. Yes, Scott?
Just a quick one here. I'll make it very quick. We've all seen the fluoride algae building, $30 million medical complex. It's all very nice. I think if you see that, it's to include primary care, outpatient surgery, rehab services, imaging, laboratory services, occupational health, specialty care, and pharmacy. It's lacking nothing about mental health, pure profit-making things here, which is fine. $140 million new professional, but in a way, it's kind of $130 million investment. There's not going to be one mental health in that place. Another one of our little problems that, I don't know the answer to that, but I just thought it was enough. Great condition to our community, I'm not saying that. It's just, again.
Doesn't address one of the problems.
Sure does. And it's just more of a city issue because they had to approve the zoning, and if they ever had discussions. That's all, thank you.
Very good. Any other reports, comments? We'll move on to number five, the minutes of November 17th. And there's a motion to approve and with a second. Any additions, corrections, other discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, then we'll move on to number six, the personnel report on correction supervisors and the special assignment weight.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am joined by Captain Justin Miller, who is captain of the detention over the sheriff's department.
Wait a minute, excuse me. Did we skip six?
No, we're on six.
Oh, okay.
Well, no, that's the order.
You're talking about supervisors.
The court counsel ordinance was six.
I have a, on my agenda.
Six.
Is the special.
Six is court counsel.
Oh, anybody else have any, does everybody have a question?
I got six for us.
I do too.
We'd be happy to yield to court counsel. I'll offer you.
Why don't you just stay there, we'll just flip it. Go ahead, and then we'll just.
All right, thank you.
I guess this was an amended agenda. All right, that's fine. Okay, well, it's my mistake, but proceed.
Good. I've attached a memo here, which is a request to extend a practice that we started about the end of last summer, allowing our command staff to take regular shifts if, in fact, the regular shift would require someone to be forced into overtime. You'll see that it is a special assignment from our perspective, and it would pay $37.28 an hour. It has been very popular, and it has saved us a lot of money in overtime, and it has provided extra income for some of our command staff. And Captain Miller has those statistics to share.
All right, go ahead.
So thank you, Mr. Chair. The original memo was from August 11th to sunset on the 31st of December. So it's a 142-day period. During that time, our supervisors worked 1,049.5 hours. That equates to 131 eight-hour shifts of overtime that would have accounted for 262 four-hour order-ins. So typically, that's how we do order-ins, is on four-hour blocks, either 4 hours prior to their shift or 4 hours after, unless it's an emergency call-in and it requires the full 8 hour order. That's 262 COs or DSOs that would have been forced to come in or stay late, taking time away from their family. That's just under two COs or DSOs a day during that time frame that we saved, from being ordered in. If we would have basically did the math and expended the 365 days, it's about 2,700 hours of overtime that would be not saved financially, but it would be saved from orderings. So roughly about 675 shifts a year of orderings for the COs and the DSOs.
So
personal and short. It is a morale booster and a money saver. And it has already been endorsed by the judiciary in law at its meeting 2 weeks ago.
All right, Jeff.
I mean, I think it's good. I'm going to support it, but you lost me with the call in for the 4 hours versus 8 hours. And so how many shifts? You did give me one number of how many shifts were saved in those 142 days, or how many shifts had to be covered. What was that number?
262.
Okay, 262.
262 4 hour blocks.
Okay,
that's how we order in. Unless it's an emergency, then it's an 8 hour block. So if someone called in for work at like 6 a.m, their shift starts at 7, they order in for the 8 hour shift.
So really, it's 131 8 hour shifts, if you want to make it in layman's terms.
Yes, sir.
131 out of how many days?
142.
So that was almost a shift a day?
Absolutely.
It's no wonder we have an overtime problem. That's a lot of... Okay, so 131 8 hour shifts. And what would that have cost us? Do you have the numbers of what that would have cost us if we would have had regular deputies doing that versus you guys coming in? Or how is this a cost saving?
Well, I don't know that it is. It's not a cost saver at all, because you're talking about overtime versus overtime. I mean, because it's still being paid at an overtime wage.
Right.
The savings is morale and the hours and the wear and tear that it takes on.
He said it was a financial savings.
Small financial savings.
I mean, and I don't know the numbers in terms of the highest wage that is paid by overtime versus the supervisory wage that is offered to them. It's more for me. It's the morale of my workers and just the wear and tear on them on a daily basis.
I would get it. I get it, and I would support that. But I want to know, if we're saving money, you don't even have to tell me down to the dime. Small financial savings, is that what? I mean, so you're telling me that I'm saving money by doing this and we have better morale?
Yeah.
Okay. Does that jive with anybody else who does numbers?
I can get you the numbers if you want to look at.
Okay.
Right.
I mean, I like the idea, and I think it's a good idea, and I think it does help on the wear and tear, because I think that's where you lose people is getting forced to do it. So, I mean,
we've had two resignations in the last couple of months, and on exit interviews, that is the main reason. They love the job, they love the people they work with. It's the wear and tear on their family life.
So this has been in play for about a half a year. Okay, and I would be curious to know how many resignations you had over that period last year, because that would give me a real, that would show me too that you're helping morale. Because if there's 7 resignations during that time last year, we have 2. Well, obviously it's helping the morale that way too.
But I'm replacing those people is very.
Oh, very, very. Anyway, we can do
training,
to not
training
have
costs on them. Training costs.
Oh, yeah.
New Hampshire, when they're in the FTO, it's 2-for-1. So that's what I'm doing.
Okay.
Bob, you tell us again, I think you told it. We've got about 20. 21 who are either in school or being trained to take regular shifts. Now that's really robust. Ashley and a team from the Sheriff's Department have offered 6 jobs in the last interview session that we just completed. And we have one more group to interview before we go back out. And so if you add all of those up, we have about 27 that we hope to get through. If we get 27, we'll be pretty close to full staff. If we get pretty close to full staff, then we're where we haven't been in a long time, and where we really want to go for all of the reasons that we've just discussed. If I could just, with your permission, I'd like to go on and say that the creativity of Ashley, Diane, and the Sheriff's Department to recruit more people will start later on this month. We're having an open house for potential candidates. They're going to be toured in the jail. We're going to give them lunch. They're going to have an opportunity to talk to people. We really need to amp up our recruitment efforts in this area so as to avoid the problem that you all know about, and that is the huge overtime. We're real optimistic in what we're doing.
That's right. Well, I'd like to first off, I'd say, yeah, I'm in support of this. But secondly, I have a procedural question. Should this be, we voting on a memo, or should we vote on a resolution, or?
It's a continuation of practices you voted on last time, so my suggestion would have to.
So this doesn't go to the planning board, you're just asking us to approve on this?
Continuation.
Keep using that.
All right.
Anything?
I'm going to approve.
Second.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, very good, thank you.
Thank you.
Joe, we'll go back, or John, we'll go back to you and the Corporation Council, proper issue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've submitted a potential change to the ordinance which would permit a different process for taking tax deeds or tax liens. It would move to an in rem procedure from what we currently have is under chapter 71, the 7514. And the advantages I see to doing this are, let me start by saying we have and will in the future partner with other municipalities and the city in particular, especially with regard to environmentally damaged properties. When we do that, we try to, if it's a tax deed property, take the tax deed property and then transfer it to the city very promptly. And then they are the ones, the city often is the ones, are the ones that have the expertise in remediating property. The harbor, Chrysler site are examples. But there's a prevailing perception with municipalities and title companies as well that title taken in rem is superior to that taken under 7514. So that is one of the advantages, I think, in going to an in rem process or having that option available to us. And I would note that approving this ordinance, taking property in rem would not be mandatory for all tax foreclosures. We could still use other methodologies, including the current one, which is 7514. Other advantages, the ability to work with and partner with the municipalities and title companies to accomplish tax foreclosure in all the different scenarios. It allows redemption of tax delinquent parcels by anyone with an interest in the property, including lien holders, mortgagees, and those holding any right of title. And what that means is that there will be a list produced of all these lien holders and people of interest on particular parcels, and they have the opportunity to pay those taxes and prevent the tax lien or tax deed procedure. And then once redeemed, the process, once it's engaged, that process to redeem the tax deed, it requires payment of all sums mentioned in the listing. That means taxes due, lien, interest due, and all reasonable costs the county incurs initiating the proceedings. So it may produce the tax revenue that we lost, reaching the point where it's ready for a tax deed. I think there's an argument that the in rem taking arguably increases the value to the buyer of the parcel based upon the integrity of title. Recently, on the Corporation Council listserv, they took a survey, and it looks like to me at least half the counties in the state use an in rem procedure or have that arrow in their quiver, if you will, that weapon in their arsenal. And they cited in this informal survey that it allows the foreclosure and handling of a large number of cases because you form a list, so you can take a large number of tax delinquent properties in one process. It results in more tax payments, according to the surveys that I saw on the list survey, and ultimately results in more revenue from the sale that provides a marketable property, palatable to both title companies and those uncomfortable with tax deeds taken under 7514. So those are the reasons that I would suggest that going to this, or having this ordinance pass and having us have that opportunity to take tax deeds under 75521 would be a wise move.
What does taking it in rem mean?
It's a different process than what we currently use. It requires certain, if you look at that statute, it spells out a process whereby the treasurer puts out a list of all the tax delinquent properties that are eligible for tax deeds. That means that they're already delinquent 3 years, right? It's a tax certificate, and then at least 2 years Beyond that, as the engineer being delinquent in the taxes without a payment plan or any effort made, there's a list produced, and then it's posted in the treasurer's office, filed with the circuit, clerk of circuit court. And then there's a notice procedure that goes on. It takes about, I think, 9 days, 8 weeks, followed by 30 days for any claim that you file. And at that point, if no answer is given, it provides that a judge and a court would give a judgment, basically cleansing the title and barring all these prior lien holders from ever coming back and asking for their debt on the property. So it's valuable in parcels that have, you know, mortgages or liens or judgments against them, in that it produces that marketable title.
Greg?
You mentioned half the county. Is this something new, or how did we come across, or you come across this? Is this, you've been thinking about it, or is it?
Yeah, I've been thinking about it. I mean, the reason I came to want to recommend this is that we recently, we've been trying to take a property that many of you might be familiar with. This is a property. It's a former scrapyard located just west of the train tracks on 52nd Street. It's about 12th Avenue or something like that. That piece of property is really encumbered by a lot of liens. Many of them are very old liens, but they are on the title nonetheless. And in talking to the city about DNR and EPA have been involved in trying to clean it up, and we're willing to give money for that purpose. The city made it very clear to me, the city attorney's office, that they were nervous about that because of these liens and judgments, and preferred taking in rem. So it's not new. I mean, it's been around. I know it's been around at least since the 60s, but I want to say since the 40s, this option, 1940s. But I, we've never done it that way. But again, in trying to partner with municipalities in the city in particular, I think it's going to be valuable to us.
All right, any other discussion? Is there a second?
Second.
Further discussion? If none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye, opposed. Circulate the resolution. So this will be on the next county board's agenda. Is this two readings, correct? So the explanation and debate comes up this second. Right, thank you. All right, we'll move on then to item A, Public Works acceptance of the grant for the park restoration.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So as explained, this is an acceptance of the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative Grant Award. The Division of Parks was recently awarded $98,757 for the reforestation of Petrified Springs Park and Golf Course. So this would allow us to accept the funds for this grant to reforest 317 trees within the park and golf course.
Very good. Discussion?
Move to approve.
Is there a second?
I have just a quick question on this. Is this a new grant?
Yes.
All right. I'm kind of new around here, but is the grant, where is the grant? Like, is that it's sitting in your office somewhere in a closet, or is it something you can see?
The grant document itself, or
what comes with this? I assume we get this check for $98,000. It's probably pages of what it encompasses.
This is a federal grant, so it is a little bit more extensive than a typical grant. But yes, it's a fairly lengthy grant process to write these. So we do have a grant writer that Mark shares with.
I understand it. Is there a reason we can't ever see that grant?
If
it's 150 boring pages, I understand, but
yeah.
Is it somewhere online? Is it?
It wouldn't be posted online because I don't know what the popularity of reviewing is.
I assume there's none.
But if there's a request,
absolutely. If I had curiosity about something, mm-hmm. the way I could see it, I
would be able to send it electronically. Whoever would appreciate a copy.
Just curious. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none. There was no second, by the way. Oh, you did, Rick?
Yeah,
all right. Any other discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. And we'll circulate this for your signature. And the next item is the migratory bird proclamation.
That is correct. So this is the resolution to proclaim September 16th, 2017, International Migratory Birthday in Kenosha County. This is an annual resolution that we have in order to require and maintain the Wisconsin Bird City status.
Move to approve.
For a second?
Second.
Does something come with that? Or?
Bird?
Bird.
I'm sorry.
What, as a result of this, what happened?
This is part of our Bird City status. So there is numerous communities throughout the state that have this, and in order for us to reapply, they require us to have a resolution tied to the application.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Rick, can you get up there, Lori? Keep laughing back there.
All right, the next item is the easement by the electric company at Petrick Line Springs.
So this is a resolution to apply for We Energy's permanent easement within Petrifying Springs Park. This is located adjacent to our picnic shelter number 5. Currently, we do not have electricity for our pavilion and any of our rentals at this specific station. So this would allow us to actually have electricity for our rentals in the 2017 season.
All right, discussion?
Move to approve.
Second. Further discussion? Yes?
What exactly is pavilion number 5 in relationship to the new bridge?
It's basically pretty central.
Anything further? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Next one is similar for Brookside.
Can I make a request?
Yes.
Jump down to item, I think it would be 12, and then I can finish up all the...
The DNR?
Yes, correct.
Recreational Boating Facilities Grant? Okay.
In this resolution, anytime we apply for a DNR grant, they require a resolution attached to the application. So this would be in conjunction with the Recreation Boating Facilities Grant for improvements to trailer parking, boat launch, multi-purpose dock, and restroom facilities for community park.
Discussion?
Do these grants have anything we have to match, or are they just straight up grants?
This one specifically is a match grant. So yes, it would be a 50-50 cost share. We actually already accrued the necessary funds through a previous budget cycle, so no necessary extra funds.
Okay, that's what I was. Okay, thank you.
Any other discussion?
Yeah, Jeff Gantz wanted to read this. He could get the. He's concerned about bullying.
I would say specifically, you can make requests from
the department
to email it.
I'll get right on that. Okay. All right, thanks. Thank you.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Aye. All right. You want to do that electric company then?
Who first? Who second?
Who?
You did the first, right? Maybe second.
Okay. Are we done with the, what about the easement on Brookside? Oh, that's Jim. Okay.
We just went a little out of order.
I see. All right.
So the Good evening. Thank you.
We are done.
Happy New Year to the committee. This is a request. As we've been constructing the Brookside Care Center, we need to establish a new electrical service. So We Energies requested a permanent easement. Originally, it was the power was going to come in from the northwest side of the building, underneath that gully, and into Brookside from that area, and they felt it was better to do it, come right in off Washington Road. So this is requesting approval for that easement. And I think there's a man for it.
Cool. All right, discussion?
Is this a
Oh, yeah.
We'll do approve.
Is there a second?
Second.
Further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right, we'll circulate
the
resolution. Thank you. And we're going to move on to county executive appointment, Dennis Elverman, to the library board. Discussion?
Move to approve.
Is there a second?
Second.
Discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? It passes, and we'll circulate that. And we have now appointment of Catherine Bothy to the Civil Service Commission. Bob?
Yes, Kathy Bothy has agreed to re-up. She's a very valuable member of the Civil Service Commission who serves faithfully, and now this is an opportunity to conduct interviews or participate in interviews. She's a terrific person.
Move to approve.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Discussion? All those in favor say aye. Opposed? It passes unanimously. And then Nancy Kemp to the Library Board.
I believe the proposal was passed.
Yes, is this a reappointment? Succeeding herself, yes.
Yes.
Move to approve.
Is there a second? Is there a second, anyone?
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And then finally, the Ellen Tupper to the Library Assistant Board.
You probably have an expert on
it. I see. Is that a relation of yours, then?
Yeah. Do we have nepotism issues? There will be no
nepotism. I'm a nepotism issue.
Move to approve.
Second.
Further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passes. And then we're up to Bob on the discipline discussion. Two parts to this, just cause for discharge, and the type of hearing, de novo review or current procedure. I think we were talking about really remedies here. Could the committee authorize something different than was recommended by the hearing examiner? And we've talked about this issue from time to time. So, what is your pleasure on this? It has a number of components, so you can discuss it individually.
I'd like to make a motion to defer for the next meeting, only for the simple fact that I think the full planning committee should be, that was why we deferred it the first time.
Like, well, that was just cause, that wasn't just part of it.
Oh, okay. Well, no, I'll withdraw that then.
Yeah. I know you want to say one thing. I'd like us to decide this tonight.
Okay. There are a whole bunch of parts to this, so
yeah. I'd like to, Terry, but it's your call.
It's up to you.
I'd like to settle this.
All right.
Rick, it is. I'm sorry. Through the chair. Yeah. We have had a number of cases that, unfortunately, we only have the opportunity to accept in whole or reject in whole. One particular case involved 6 months back pay for two individuals, which was really hard for this committee, some of the people I've talked to on this committee, to agree to. However, they didn't think that the termination was appropriate for confidential reasons. How long does that stay confidential? Anyway, most of us talking that I've talked to on this committee thinks that if this group should think that termination was a little too severe for the case, however, some type of discipline should be incurred. I think this committee should be able to set that at what level we think is appropriate. Instead of just saying yes or no, it gives us a better option, which is better in the case of, or we wouldn't have to, in one case, you wouldn't have all the back wages if we should decide something else. And then that's on the county standpoint, you wouldn't have to pay as much. And then also, bringing somebody back to work, trying to make that choice, it's a difficult choice. Knowing it's going to cost the taxpayers 6 months' pay makes it kind of a detriment to that employee, because you're thinking to yourself, geez, do I really want to do that?
And that's why I wholeheartedly believe that we ought to be able to set something in between.
Jeff?
There's two things. First of all, based on our current policy and guidelines, et cetera, legally, can we do that?
We would have to change the policy.
Yeah. This requires a change in those rules, which the county board adopted.
Okay, so would it be, I understand what you're saying, but then why would, see, what we used to do before was we had the hearing was before the board, and people didn't like that because they had to sit there and deal with that, and, you know, but what you're asking too is for us to get information from somebody who's reviewed it, and then really do our own investigation on top of it anyway. So why should we pay an independent hearing officer? Would be my question. Well,
the answer to your question is we have to.
Okay, and that's
law requires.
There we go. That I knew there was law somewhere.
Yeah, conducted by someone who is identified by the county as independent, and. So that is we fortunately have found someone who is very good and very independent, comes from Greendale, so pretty much out of the market. And so we have, our last three have been conducted by that person. He is a judge, a municipal judge, and he really runs a very good hearing. But the next step is the endorsement then on the county board. The county board has yielded the responsibility by policy to this committee. So it is the endorsement of the county board, the final appeal, if you will, the last chance to accept the findings of the independent hearing office. If I may, I want you to understand how difficult it is to bring a termination to this level. Not that it's difficult to present to you, but it's difficult to come to the conclusion that an employee needs to be terminated. It takes the work of the supervisor, the division, and or department head, my office, the independent hearing officer, county executive is informed of every termination, and you. So it's not something that comes without a heck of a lot of work, and I'm not saying that's what you're saying, okay? I just want to make sure that you understand that we don't make a decision to term life. If you should want to consider something that is something short of termination, I would like to know what you are thinking. And I would like to present that to the attorney and see what they if you were to decide the termination was too much, what would be the appropriate thing? And what would you use to justify?
That's where my questions are coming from. I mean, we're hiring an independent judge to look at this, and then some of us are gonna do some separate research to see what might or might not be warranted. I don't know. I think that opens up some slippery slopes of how you wanna progress with this.
I agree with Jeff there. I understand what you're saying. But I have concerns about how much flexibility we have on these things because we don't necessarily know these employees. We haven't gone through the process as much. Staying consistent. You and I may have extreme attitudes about employees' termination for what the reasons are. I mean, it just could very well be. We rely on an independent. That's what that person's there for, so that people like you and I aren't fighting over should this guy be given more money, is this right? I just think that could be difficult, but I also understand the board's procedure having some ultimate, you know, doing that. I'd rather have us have a narrow approach to that than a broader, is my personal feeling. Putting aside the legal issues for a second, just if we allow broader approaches to our decisions, it brings in a lot more elements to that that could cause some issues. So,
all right,
thank you, Terry.
Yeah.
I guess my concern with this is, A,
how's it working so far? Do you, are you guys having a problem with it so far, the way that, that we've, I don't see it being a big issue. I mean, I go back to the aspect of what you said, Bob, and I agree with what you said. We don't go from zero to 100 with these employees. Do you know what I mean? Termination is a big thing. And more than, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, more than likely they've had multiple opportunities to correct the issue at hand before they're terminated, other than some egregious issues, potentially, you know what I mean?
Shooting the personnel director gets you here.
Right, right. And I have to agree with Greg and Jeff on that. I don't know if widening the issue, widening the scope is going to be in our benefit. I think it's going to be, I think what you're doing is you're actually legally putting yourself in harm's way to a certain extent, because everybody's going to see it differently. An independent arbitrator comes down, and I think that's the best way, because, again, if we see things differently, this person is totally unbiased to the situation, and they're looking at what? The facts of the case. Am I correct on that? That's basically...
That's presented.
Yeah, right. Well, I guess I can see that, but then again, I got to kind of go over what Greg said. We don't know this employee, and I have enough faith in our administration and supervisors that they're doing the right thing, too. I guess that's all I have to. Rick?
Yeah, and then it's no, through no fault of yours, you didn't sit through these hearings Jeff did, and I have to say that, Bob, I understand how hard it is to terminate somebody, I know, but, you know, I would even say it's almost harder to overturn your termination. That is doesn't come easy. I mean, that's very, very, very hard for the people on this committee to make the decision to do that. And the only reason that decision was made because the facts came to light that were not presented in the, and we get a lot of information. We get like 70-some pages in those cases. And facts exist which could have caused the county a lot of legal problems in one particular case, and I know I can't talk about specifics, so I'm kind of bound on this. So it's very, very difficult for us to do. Also, and I'm going to get back to the argument of being able to make changes on the one way instead of one way or the other, and my argument is going to be on a recent case, and I won't use any names, and I won't use specifics of what the employee did wrong, but I won't talk about what the independent hearing officer said. And this is this is going to be the just cause, which I'm going to ask to table because I'm not going to be able to make a few meetings. We had a case, and I'll read the exact words here. The county position that employee X was an at-will employee, is what the independent hearing officer said. Wisconsin law permits, now I'm going to, this is quote, I'm reading it exactly as it says from the independent hearing officer. Wisconsin law permits that an at-will employee may be terminated for good cause, for no cause, or cause morally wrong, without thereby being guilty of legally wrong. And it gives a case of Brockmeyer versus Dun & Bradstreet. Thus, under an at-will standard, the county should terminate the employment of the grievant. The county could terminate the employment of the grievant for any reason or no reason. Goes on to say now here, this is now this, if there's an argument, I'm not saying yes or no to this argument, but there's an argument. If we have to accept this agreement in whole, which we did, this is what the independent hearing officer said. Does that mean we're accepting this? I'm not saying yes or no, but he then said, reading the introductory paragraph and the progressive discipline policy together, it must be concluded that the county did not intend to create a purely at-will employment relationship. Therefore, for purposes of reviewing the termination of the grievance employment, it is hereby determined that the appropriate standard of review in this matter is a just cause standard. Now, the question is, do we have to accept that? Or did we accept that as a whole? And that's an argument you can argue both sides. But the independent hearing officer said we have a just cause standard. So we don't have the ability to change
any of the terms of that agreement. We accepted it in whole. So I mean, so what Terry's asking to do to modify this has a lot of merit. And I think it's something that probably needs to be looked into, probably a lot deeper than what we can do in one meeting. So I agree that we should be able to make modifications. I don't know exactly how or whether it's legal or not, but it's something that this committee really should seriously consider.
All right, well, there's no motion on the floor here, so there's no other discussion and no other proposals, and we'll move on to the next item on the agenda.
Maybe somebody could come forward with a resolution at a further date, but it's something we need to think about.
All right.
Yeah.
Can I ask Bob, what do you want on? Do you want to make a decision on who you guys is, or what is the desire of the Human Services Department?
Our Human Resources Department.
We wrote a policy. We like policy related. So we think it worked. We think that the committee has shown its independence and did, I would argue, its job. When it reversed the one particular one, the others, I think of the other four that have come, I think there's five total. I think you supported the other four, the independent hearing officers' decision. If I can speak to your comment, we do have a network policy, and what I think the independent hearing officer was identifying the elements that were contained within. I believe that we have a policy that has at least four steps for the employee to present and justify to any one of four people along those steps the reasons why not to turn. They also have the appeal processes at every step of progressive discipline policy, which, as you know, includes the verbal and the written and the suspension and all of that. So what I think the independent hearing officer was saying is they got this at will policy in the state. Law said what it said, but this organization is using and has implemented just cause elements to its process. And for that reason, I think our employees get pretty good shape when they go into the system. Specifically to your situation, we are comfortable with the policy.
Can I move that we accept this chair as a program?
Why?
Or not?
I don't think it's necessary. The proposals are all been passed by the board. If you want to change them,
well, I want to leave this committee and that we proved. I don't know, because we keep talking about it every month or.
What do you have? Well, anybody can bring it up at any time.
Yeah, we're I don't think it's necessary to reaffirm that which has already been passed the board.
Mr. Dodge, you have to bring up a resolution or something?
Or something.
Yeah, right. That's right.
So there's no decision has to be.
There's no proposal on the table. That's why I proposed to move on to the next item of business.
I just wanted to hear Bob's opinion. Thank you. Okay.
Right. He didn't calendar this. This has been something that has been discussed at a number of meetings. So I suggested that we put it on today's meeting to give somebody the opportunity to propose a change. If you don't want to do it, we'll move on to the next item.
Okay.
All right, number 12, audit of the bills. We'll circulate that. Then reports. The first report was based upon a letter that State Senator Bob Wirch sent to me regarding the manufacturing and agricultural tax credit. And should that be changed? I don't know if you're familiar with that or not, but agriculture and manufacturing in the state, they're given a certain tax credit which eliminates taxes. And well, why don't you read his letter to us?
Dave wasn't able to be here tonight, but he spoke to me earlier this week. He said he called the Wisconsin County Association to find out whether or not this is something that is a good thing to pursue. And he said that their response was that Governor Walker will not take this out.
Why don't you read the letter from Bob Wirtz, so okay. The committee has an understanding of what we're talking about.
Thanks. This is from Senator Bob Wirtz, dated December 7th, 2016, to Senator Alberta Jarling and Representative John Nygren, co-chairs of the Joint Committee on Finance. Dear Senator Jarling and Representative Nygren, the governor and legislature will soon begin work on what will be a very difficult state budget. Our community, schools, local and state roads, health care for our friends and neighbors, higher education, economic development, and other vital programs will be competing for state dollars at a time when revenues have been coming in lower than projected. Tough choices will have to be made. We write to you today to offer a suggestion that would save the state hundreds of millions of dollars over the next 2 years. According to the Legislative Fiscal Bureau, suspending the manufacturing and agriculture tax credit for the 2017 and 2018 tax years would result in approximately $600 million in increased revenue. This tax credit, which was slipped into the 2011 through 13 state budget at the last minute with no public input, was touted as a job creation tool. But results have shown that it just isn't working. Instead, it has served as a giveaway to the mega wealthy in our state. According to a recent Fiscal Bureau analysis, 0.3% of income tax filers will qualify for the credit in 2017. The same analysis showed that 11 people, all with annual incomes of $35 million or more, will split $21.5 million, averaging $1.96 million each. At the same time, the analysis cast doubt on job creation claims related to the tax credit. In the 3 years before the credit took effect, Wisconsin added 31,431 manufacturing jobs. In the 3 years after, just 10,904. That's 20,527 fewer jobs, and the 3 years before the credit encompassed the Great Recession and its aftermath. It's clear that the manufacturing and agriculture tax credit has not created the jobs that we were promised while causing a huge hole in the state budget. We could take a huge step toward repairing our budget issues by suspending the credit for the 2017 and 2018 tax years. We ask that you give this serious consideration as you begin the budget process.
All right, any discussion?
Who wrote this?
Senator
Wirtz. He
didn't write
it. Yeah, I don't think he wrote it.
He signed it.
He signed it.
It says, we write today. We? How many times do you address a letter saying we?
Well, I don't know. I mean, you got to ask him that question.
Well, that's what I'm asking. I'm convinced he got this from someone and just copied it. Because it says that. It says, we write today to offer you a suggestion that came from an organization. You can tell that. Because he would have said, I write today to offer a suggestion about how that's how you wrote it. That's how you write a letter. So can we ask where he got it before we pursue? And if he says he write it, I said, well, you got to learn how to write.
Well, I think that if you want to ask, you can. But I'm not going to critique somebody's English.
I think we should be more concerned with the accuracy of what is being said rather than who signed it or where it came from. Is it correct? Is this actually factual? Is it best for the taxpayers to not take that route? The facts of the case are more important than who wrote it to me. And is it factual? If it's not factual, okay, but if it is, then it's something we should look at.
I can agree with that.
Well, I guess he sent this letter to me. I brought it to the committee's attention. If you want to refer to the legislative committee, if you want to draft a resolution urging the legislature, if you want to do nothing, you can do whatever you please.
Did he sent this to you?
Yes.
Did you ask him for it?
No.
Okay. He got some. All right. You still might. I'm convinced he copied this.
He might have
got it sent to all the county, but whatever. If it was Mr. Wirtz's comments, maybe I'd have a different opinion. I'd like to know where it came from, that's all. Could you write him and just say, Bob,
I'm not going to do that, but if you want to write him.
Well, I don't.
Yeah, I mean,
if it's referred to the legislative committee, then that question could be asked, yeah. Right. Why don't we refer it to the legislative committee?
Okay.
Yeah.
Can you make a motion?
I'm sorry, move.
Your second?
I'll second that.
Discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye, opposed? All right, can you just send that over to the chair of the legislature committee? Comments. All right, next item is anything for personnel, anything further about
you? Nothing else.
All right. General fund balance?
So this is up in the fund balance report.
Well, do you want to circulate the paper that has the general fund balance on there?
She's
still
got the
turns. Is that bad news? Is that
no. Do you have a handout?
Oh, good news. Oh, I see. Yeah, they're sounded like they're ducking.
Do you have any handouts?
Do we have the general fund of the balance sheet?
I have one handout.
Well, where's the general fund balance sheet so we can put it into context?
There's a line item on the general fund balance report that says surplus and human services, see attached, which one she's in. And it's like our quarterly report. So as of the end of the year, our total without Brookside, of course, is going to be estimating a return to the general fund of $1.3 million. So I thought I would be present to explain this. It's good news, but I wanted to explain it to you.
Yeah, because I have questions. I can have that much extra.
Okay. And that's why I'm here. Okay, so the very first one, DADS, Disability, Aging, and Disability Services. For the first time ever, they're showing a surplus. This comes from two things. One is September 1st, and I'm just going to September, as of September 1st, the KIDS, Commission on Human Development Services, started a NIATX project. NIATX stands for Network to Improve Addiction Treatment Services. A little bit of background, this was actually a process improvement plan developed from the UW School of Engineering. So they took a process improvement type plan and they brought it to addiction treatment services. So one of the things in this project is, instead of when a person is in crisis, instead of sending them directly to the emergency room where, you know, you're in a hospital setting, you got a doctor around, you got nurses, you got police department, the crisis worker comes in, it's kind of scary and upsetting. So the change in this is to meet the person wherever they're having their crisis or at a neutral environment. Now, absolutely, if they need medical treatment, we're at the emergency room. But normally, if they're in crisis, there's something going on that's a mental health issue. So what happened was the two people at KIDS who were in charge of this mental health, the crisis unit, met with all three shifts from Pleasant Prairie Police Department, KPD, Sheriff's Department. All three shifts explaining this project so that everybody could be on board with it. Well, I guess the old adage that if you do something different, you get a different outcome, I just didn't expect to see it this way. So our institute placements, this is a project to reduce our institute placements, has really declined in the last quarter because of this. So we're keeping people out of an automatic emergency detention because they're not in the hospital. We don't have the doctor and the nurse over us saying, no, this person, you know, can't take care of us. But we do have the professionals, the medical professionals who are working with them. So we actually are only now going over about 700,000 for our institute placements, which is the lowest we've ever, you know, hit that mark for total. So the flip side of that is our Medicaid claiming. And this will go for the first and the second fiscal and family services. Now, the purposes of the funds. So, So, our Medicaid services for both CCS and, which is Community Comprehensive Services, and a WMCR reimbursement. Now, WMCR is Wisconsin Medicaid claiming reporting, and it's an old pot of $17 million that was intended to cover. And at the end of every year, counties who do Medicaid services put in all of our reconciliation costs, including administrative overhead for all of our Medicaid services. And obviously, some of our fee-for-service Medicaid services do not cover our 100% cost. So this pot then is divided up on our excess and tried to give us an additional reimbursement. This, it has not changed. There's been $17 million in this pot forever. So, but the state decided to do a database for our Medicaid actual cost reconciliation for both CCS and WMCR. They've been working on this database since probably the beginning of 15. Well, we used the database, we used the old way in 14, and we owed them back on reconciliation of CCS costs about $60,000. So when we closed the books in 2015, we had doubled our CCS services. So we put in a payable of $150,000. I have two very smart, intelligent business staff people who are very good at picking up databases. And they worked on this project this year, probably from July through September, on understanding this new database that if we plug in this number, how does it end up at the end? Plus, we've gotten a better definition of administrative overhead. So we were able to get more reimbursement for our administrative overhead. So we reconcile 14, 15, and then we put in an estimate for 16. So this 1.2 million that you see on the second line is really 3 years. It's about a million of that, of the 1.2. So it's 3 years, so you will never see that major, so we're playing catch up a little bit. We just got news December that they accepted our reconciliation because we had no clue if this was even. And then I have to remember we put in that $150,000 payable. Well, we're not don't have to pay now, we're getting money, so I had to reverse that. So that brought back another $150,000 on our books. And then we just had a small personnel
sick one in the lottery.
So this is 3 years now, so I'm not going to be
it's a good
it.
Thing. Good
I
thing.
I got great staff, they really put their money
this is,
to
this
it.
This is good.
And we were able to include more administrative overhead. So I mean, kudos to them. I've given them, you know, emails and social media.
Well, how is this? Let's look at that general fund list here.
Okay, so pass that out. That's
we don't. Where's that?
Are you leaving?
Can I ask a question? Sure. For a budget time, was this known?
No. 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 It was November, the end of November when we submitted it. And then September,
it's just
we have checks.
Okay.
And it's an estimate for 16, but we're real
confident. Okay, so does everybody have one?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to start with the top of the schedule, sales tax. That's increased a little bit. It's looking a little bit more optimistic. We have yet to get in two payments, so this reflects that. It's conservative. Human service surplus, Laura just went through that, so I added the lump sum right here. This includes first vacancy surplus. Moving down to highway and facilities, parks, DPW. This is not moved much from the last time we reported. There's a little bit of a forecast in there for some miscellaneous receivables that we may still have not on our books, but you know, waiting to receive money back for expenses already incurred. That's the only increase there. Vacancy went down quite a bit because I took out human services vacancy. Let me explain that a little bit. Vacancy budget to actual for every other department, most departments have their personnel covered with levy. Human services has their personnel, they're mostly revenue, so there's very little bit of their personnel expense that is covered with levy. So therefore, Lori's included her vacancy within the number she's reported. I have removed it from the vacancy number I previously reported. So that's the reason that came down. There was no change in the tax delinquency calculation yet. We're still receiving money up through February, so we keep looking at that, but just keep in mind that that might grow or increase.
Just one quick second.
Sure.
Could this be 16? I'm saying we're going to
be 14. Year end at the top, could it be 16?
Oh, no, it's an unassigned reserve year end balance of 2015, and that carries over to 16. Your calculation for 16 is at the bottom.
Okay.
The line that goes across that bottom balance, it's like a beginning balance?
It's a beginning balance that carries down to
15. Okay. Then these will affect change in income.
So the reason why down below you see 2016 general fund balance is because I'm saying there's no increase and no decrease right now, okay?
Thank you.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Sure. Law enforcement, this includes every department that's included within law enforcement, that includes circuit court, juvenile intake, yada, yada. There's some contracted service surplus, bond defaults, and a little bit of child support based upon last year. It's a forecast. All these numbers are based upon actual and forecast component. Miscellaneous, that's come down quite a bit. It's about 50,000 right now. Sheriff, he's about breaking even. If you look at his surpluses compared to his deficit, which is down below, his deficit is driven from his overtime expense. And but there's a small deficit reporting there right now. Again, this is, we have, the reason why I didn't give you an update in January or December is because we didn't have all the payrolls in. We do have most of them in right now. There's like a half of the payroll that has to go in yet. I don't expect this shortage for personnel to move much on the sheriff. I think it's a good number right now. We're still looking at whatever they may end up for surpluses on their supplies, contracted services, but we feel like it's a pretty good estimate. Their U.S. Federal Marshal, they're estimating about $1 million worth of surplus, but they have some deficits and other revenues that have fallen short, so that's reduced by that amount. Reserves used for one-time expenditures, that's been constant. We have seen a little bit of a rise in health insurance deficit, about 200 and some. Well, actually, this number will look lower to you from the last report. The reason that is because we took out about 34% of that expense, because that will go towards golf, and that will be Brookside's portion of the internal service fund expense. That those two report in a different fund. They do not report in general fund. It's fund 600, fund 641. So in other words, it doesn't affect that expense. That expense is shuttled off to the enterprise. So it's reduced by that, but then there was a slight increase, a little bit higher claims just recently. There might be a lower IBNR accrual because we feel like we might have gotten most of our claims in at the end of the year. So that's the number to watch as well. And then we have the treasurer delinquency and interest on taxes. That portion of the $353,000, basically you can say the tax decrease, decrease in tax delinquency is kind of an offset to this number. We did fall short on our interest on taxes, about 260 some thousand, so that's a final number. And that's where we're sitting for right now.
In 2015, wasn't the percentage at 25 and 28?
No.
It was 28?
Yes.
Or one, so yes.
In fact, this is a little lower than last year's. It's about 1% lower than what we had.
Okay. Would you leave this on the county board desk on Tuesday for their information?
One more thing I'd like to emphasize. Now, we have an estimated general fund expenditure. So, of course, we don't know what our total expenditures are going to be, but from right now, we can tell they're about $2 million higher than what they were last year. So that's why it's an estimated number. When that number is finalized, that will drive a change in your unassigned reserve as a percentage of general fund. Well, that won't be until probably around March, April.
All right. Any other discussion?
Mr. Rito. Bob, I see this health insurance number, and I know we've had a bad couple of years, you know. I mean, maybe you can make me feel better and tell me that this isn't common. I mean, you know what I mean?
We've had two very bad years.
Right.
And we are meeting a week from Friday, or 2 weeks from Friday, with the consultant who has further interpreted our recovery from that. What you heard, I think, toward the end of last year was the top 25, and really the top 25 was the hugest impact on the numbers you see there. That, the acuity, the nature of the diseases of the top 25 appear to be moderate. And so that's a good sign. And that we are starting to decline among the top 25. We talked about neonatals and we talked about transplants. And I will yield credit to Supervisor Retzlaff, who suggested that we get insurance for our transplants. That will serve us very well, I think, in the future. And I thank him for the suggestion. And I think that was terrific. Other things is we're seeing a decline in some of those more serious cases that we had. So hopefully we're going down. As I said, we're going to meet in a couple of weeks with Horton, find out what they think is going on. I'll be happy to bring back that information.
Right, would you please? I'd like to really stay on this, because it's important.
It is. It's you know, over my 20 years, those last 2 years were a little difficult to watch. But hopefully we've hit the peak. We're coming down. The general average is 2 bad years and 8 good years out of every 10, and we've certainly had our 2 bad.
Thank you.
Jeff. On behalf of myself and the Finance Committee, I'd like to thank your two people that went into this and did a good job at finding this. I do like to see you more when things are in parentheses. So maybe it was very good.
Is there any other way to put them on something else and get more?
Young stars.
Well, tell them we appreciate it.
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, any other reports here?
There are budget modifications if you want to pass them around and review them.
That you're asking for action tonight?
No, you can just review them. We were asked to give a report of budget modifications.
I see. Okay. So are there any key ones there that you'd like to bring to our attention? Nothing on.
So each one of these.
Okay. No, they're just copies. One copy of every one that was made. So.
Is this a summary sheet?
Yeah. No, it's just the first budget modification. That's not all.
Any other reports or any other business?
There's two resolutions that are missing. If anybody has copies. I believe it's the Library Assistant Board helping them refer
I threw my board on, so I don't see anybody hiding. Did you create your stuff or were you looking at it?
There was two things.
Yeah.
You want
that? Yeah,
those are
at home. Okay. All right, here we go. Almost got away. Almost.
Now
I thought
that
was for me.
We're
going to
review.
What?
Okay. You're stealing some room.
Okay. They have a little post-it. There's one.
Okay. I don't know. This one, what did they buy?
Did you sign them?
Oh, that one, Cooper. Yeah, I don't know. I had no problem with that one.
So
you tried to take the ones you had the problems with? I like how you did it.
Well, he was going through papers to discuss my understanding through my consumer.
Do you guys support anything else?
Any other questions?
Move to adjourn.
Second.
All those in favor, say aye.
That's the only one, like, I didn't say that. You go first after this.